Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview Dr. Vincent Pedre. Dr. Vincent Pedre is the medical director of Pedre Integrative Health and founder of Dr. Pedre Wellness. He is an MD that is a functional medicine certified practitioner in the private practice in New York City since 2004. He's also certified in yoga and medical acupuncture. Dr. Pedre's specialty is the gut. He believes the gut is the gateway to excellent health and a better brain. He's the best-selling author of Happy Gut, the cleansing program to help you lose weight, gain energy, and eliminate pain. He's helped thousands of people resolve their digestive and gut-related health issues. In this episode, we talk about why antibiotics, pesticides, sugar, GMO foods, monocrops, and loss of seed diversity are threats to biodiversity and resulting in the rise in many seemingly gut-unrelated diseases, such as allergies, asthma, and autoimmune disease. We talk about the cutting-edge science, what it reveals about the gut-brain axis. And he even shares his recommended immune boost supplement regimen that's especially important during this time of COVID. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Vincent Pedre. And if you'd like to know what yours truly has been up to over the past many weeks, please go to sovereigntyacademy.com to learn more. Again, please enjoy my conversation with Vincent Pedre. Vincent, welcome to the Wealthy Wealthy Podcast. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I'm really looking forward to this conversation because you are a medical doctor in the thick of it in New York City. And we had this scheduled before this coronavirus hit us. And so what we're going to maybe talk about a few weeks ago is a different conversation. So for everybody listening, would you introduce yourself and just tell a little bit of story about Vincent and your practice and the type of medicine that you do?
I'm Dr. Vincent Pedre. I am trained as a traditional Western doctor in internal medicine here in New York. I trained at Mount Sinai Hospital. But really, my love and my passion was integrative medicine and looking for the root cause of disease. And that's what over the years brought me to functional medicine, which has become my specialty. And within that, my subspecialty is gut health. And that eventually led me to write a book, Happy Gut, which has been out now for over 4 years and still doing really well. I could say it's a perennial bestseller, and it's still relevant today, as relevant as it was when I first published it a little over 4 years ago. And I've been in private practice in New York since 2004, which is crazy. So over 15 years, and I'm a doctor for 20 years. And I've seen so many things. I mean, I lived through 9/11 here in New York, and I've gone through previous epidemics, not as bad as this one, but the swine flu. And then, of course, now living through this and helping my patients and people online and just figuring out how do you navigate this and trying to make sure that the conversation is not just about fear and like almost feeling powerless, that you can't do something about it, and really trying to empower people to realize that there is a terrain, your body is a terrain, and if you can fertilize that terrain, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get an infectious disease like a flu or like this particular coronavirus, which is highly infectious. But what it does mean is that your body will be the best prepared to handle it. And talking about terrain, the people who are at highest risk, whether it's this pandemic or any other flu virus, are going to be people with chronic disease. And they're finding that people with obesity, people who suffer from high blood pressure, and people who have diabetes, those are the highest risk groups for ending up in the hospital and ending up with the worst consequences or possibly death from this coronavirus. So I think in general, you know, it goes back to everything that I've been preaching for years about the importance of building your terrain to fortify your body so you can handle stuff like this. But also the fact that this is a wake-up call. You know, so many people put off saying, well, I'll get to that, or I'll go on that diet eventually. And for right now, I'm just going to eat my emotions and I'm going to do what I want to do, or I'm too stressed, or I don't have the time. You know, there's always some sort of excuse. And I bring that up because that's part of the way I practice is mind, body, spirit. And really, after so many years in practice, what I've realized is that the key and the most important thing, I think, is mindset. Because before anything else, if you want to change somebody's behavior, you have to change their mindset around their lives and what they can accomplish. And I know you speak a lot about mindset when it comes to money. Well, I speak about mindset when it comes to health and changing behaviors for the positive, because we can speak it. You know, we can say, well, I want to be thinner, I want to be healthier. But if you don't change the internal belief system, you're not going to follow through your words, you know. So it's getting
the. Yeah. One of my favorite Jim Quick's quotes is behaviors follow beliefs, and that's exactly what you're saying. So what is the mindset or the mindsets that are important that, you know, preempt the behaviors themselves? Like, what are mindsets do you think people have that aren't really serving them, and what's the replacement mindset?
Such a great question. I think the mindset and what I hear from my patients is things like, I don't deserve it, or I'm too stressed, or I just can't handle it. You know, I don't have enough time. It's going to be a lot of work. You know, so there's a mindset that it's going to be really difficult. So it looks like this mountain that you just can't conquer. You'll never be able to conquer. And the shift in the mindset, you know, and I work a lot with my patients when they allow me on I am statements. And what I find is that, and I see this a lot in women, but this can be men as well, is, you know, starting with, I am deserving, you know, because there is a lot of times it comes from childhood, maybe from guilt, maybe because they're the caretaker for everyone else in their family and they don't know how to set proper boundaries and say no, you know, because they give, but they don't know how to set a boundary to allow for themselves to recharge and receive. And a lot of these people who are caregivers, they don't know how the importance is to be in the energy flow. The energy goes out. It also has to come back in. And you have to be open to receiving. But perhaps the first place that someone can be open to receiving is from themselves, to receive love from themselves, to say, I am worthy. I am deserving. You know, I am deserving of the health that I want. And then to realize that if you keep saying it's going to be a lot of work, it's going to be a lot of work. Yeah, I mean, it's going to take some planning, but the planning isn't going to happen until you actually plan it. You know, so you can keep putting it off. But what I tell people is you can be in denial, but eventually your body is going to come knocking the door and saying, hey, you know, because we are in these biophysical bodies that have a certain need. It's a certain way to be taken care of. So changing the mindset around that, and also changing the mindset about what is important to you, you know, because for me, you know, I use myself as an example, because I really do believe walking the talk. So I do what I tell people. And one of the things I realize is that for people to actually create long-lasting health behaviors, you need to figure out, where do you prioritize your health? You know, is your health here? And is it below that ice cream that's sitting in your fridge that's calling to you at night that you know is bad for you because it's part of what's contributing to your overweight and your obesity and maybe your high blood pressure? Or is your health here? You know, how committed are you? You know, don't just speak it. You know, true commitment. If you put your health at the highest priority, then there is no deprivation, because if your health is here and the ice cream is here and you look at that ice cream or that cookie or whatever it is, and you realize that it's a transient gratification with long-term consequences. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't eat a, you know, gluten-free chocolate cookie at some point. You know, I do these things. I believe in being realistic. But what I think, what's important is the general trend. So if you put your health, if you commit to your health as the highest priority, then that whole conversation around feeling deprived because you're not having that cookie, because you're not having that milk chocolate, because you're not having that dessert, it doesn't matter anymore. Because now you're choosing, you're making a pro choice for your health. And it's not a deprivation, it's actually a positive choice for your health when you say no to those things that you know are damaging to you. So that's part one of the mindset shifts that I challenge people to change, because when they're making choices that they know, you know, once you ask a person like, yeah, I know this is wrong for me, I'm like, well, if you put your health at the highest priority, would you still make that choice? And the answer usually is no. So they're not, so it's part of it is putting your priorities in order, you know, and what you put your attention to then starts to grow.
Yeah, and to your point that you made earlier is, if I feel worthy and I love myself, an act of love is wanting to be healthy, is the desire through an act of love of care of self. It's a loving kind act to put our health as the top priority. And it's one thing I really love about you and getting to know you is, you know, especially as an MD and even functional medicine and a scientist and, you know, all the remarkable things you are, you're so spiritually tapped in, and your spiritual practices, your spiritual studies, your spiritual rituals are such a huge part of even the medicine you practice. Can you share more about how your spiritual piece fits into to even maybe underneath some of the worthiness?
Absolutely. I grew up Catholic, going to church on Sundays. And so there was that. But eventually when I became a teenager, I started questioning that because of the you know, some of the hypocrisy that I saw and some of the, you know, again, people speaking one way but acting a different way. And to me, that is so, that's inauthentic. And I became very attracted to Buddhist philosophy and reading that, started reading more about that in college, and then eventually discovered meditation. And, you know, for me, what resonates is that if you're a good person, you're a good person, and you don't need to go to church to be a good person, and you certainly shouldn't be out there being a bad person and then go to confession, absolve yourself, and then go do the same thing again, which I have seen in these circles. So I think if you're a good person, you should be a good person all around. And I do believe in karma. What you put out into the world comes back to you, especially if you're giving, comes back to you fourfold. And so part of my practice and what I adopt and what I try to also teach to my son is being in gratitude, you know, the importance of gratitude. And even just gratitude is basically, to me, the doorway to a positive mindset. And then a positive mindset is the pathway to great health. You know, because then you're choosing things that are good for you. You're doing loving kind acts to yourself. And then on the other flip side is meditation. And I've used that over the years in many ways, done all different sorts of meditation. And I switch up depending on what I think is needed. Sometimes I do loving compassion meditation, which is Tibetan practice, where first you give love to yourself. And then you expand that love, and maybe you're sending out love to your close family and friends. And then you expand that, and maybe you send love to everyone who's in your city, then your country, then this part of the world, then the entire globe, and then out into the universe, like really expanding love and compassion. And that is a really beautiful practice. Again, going back to what we were saying about feeling worthy, giving yourself love. Like, whoever spends time just meditating and just growing love for themselves, you know, and then how you can augment and expand that love to everyone around you, even the people who annoy you, the people who you've had fights with. So that's part of my practice. And then those I am statements have been really key and important for me, even just the using many of those I am statements, because believe it or not, as successful as I am, there have been moments where I didn't feel worthy enough of things. And I realized that I had to overcome all of that in order to kind of expand into the next levels. And another one of my affirmations has been, I am in abundance, you know. And but the important thing to me and what I teach people is not just to say the words. It's really important to also feel the words. So what I used to do, especially when I was expanding and I wanted my message to grow and to reach more people, I would say the I am in abundance, but then I would sit in meditation and I would imagine what that felt like. What would that abundance feel like? You know, and to me, it's an energy. You know, a lot of people might think, you know, abundance, money, and I know you know that money follows energy, money follows mindset. So for me, it was like, what is that feeling of abundance? And then the universe will echo what you're feeling, you know. So you can speak that you want this, this, and that. I want the best health. I want that. But if what you're feeling inside is opposite of that, that is the truth. The truth is the feeling inside. And that's where, you know, when I talk about mindset, it's about working on that conversation, that inner voice that's happening inside, that many times is sabotaging one's efforts to live the life that they say they want to live.
Yeah. So what do you see? Thank you. What do you see from your practice, from working with your private patients? And I mean, you have a thriving medical practice in New York, and you do a lot of other type of work, so your book and speaking and that type of thing. What do you notice? What are the most destructive, like self-sabotaging, destructive behaviors that people are in? I mean, I see a lot in my world that they're trading their health for wealth with this belief, like, I'll worry about my health in the future. If I get my success first, and I get this first, and I get that first, then I'll focus on my health. So it's almost that their mentality. But what are you seeing is these most destructive behaviors that are ultimately, like you said, it will come up to, you know, catch up with you sooner or later.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is sitting at home at night when everything gets quiet, and all the uncomfortable feelings of the stress that you're managing in your life starts to bubble up. And instead of facing those feelings, what people do is they eat them away. So you'll start going to the cabinet and then you're pulling out the chips, or you're pulling out the desserts or the cookies. And it could be savory, it could be sweet. You know, there's different types of people and what they like to emotionally eat. I mean, I had a patient who would get into a kind of a heated moment at work, and she would be putting her hand in a candy ball, and the candy would already be in her mouth before she even knew that she had done it. That's how automatic that was. And I mean, I think a lot of people are aware at certain level that this is happening, but a lot of it can be happening at a subconscious level. And who knows, you know, maybe it's coming from when they were kids and your parents rewarded you with desserts, you know, for good behavior or whatnot. So eating like that, which is self-sabotaging, and they know, because your weight starts to go up. And then at some point, there's this mentality that, you know what, who cares? Like, I'm doing it anyway. I'm just going to keep doing it. Like, I don't care. And it just continues in this self-sabotaging cycle that doesn't end until there is an awakening or an awareness of what they're doing. And that's what I try to do with my patients is, provide I'm basically feel like I'm a guide to constantly awaken them to the way that they can be more aware of themselves, of their bodies, of the things that they are doing, of their behaviors that are working against what they really want, you know?
Yeah, so let's now bring that back to current times. And now we're most of us are in our homes and we've got stocked pantries because everybody has filled their pantries with lots of extra inventory of food. And I don't know, I've been seeing memes that, Jenny Craig stock is really going up or whatever the case is, that, because it might even be more of an opportunity to self-medicate with food or boredom. Or whatever the case is there. So, do you have any advice or any, like you said, just awareness or pre-thought that to get in the middle of just taking on new behaviors?
Absolutely, and especially for people who aren't used to working from home, so it's complete like your whole schedule has been thrown off. So there's a lot of things that fill time that allow people to at least have some level of rhythm to their day, and now they find themselves at home, and the kitchen isn't very far. So what I'm finding is some patients are starting to snack all day long, or because they bought all this non-perishable food, they feel they need to eat it. And one thing that I tell people that I think, if you just, if just a simple thing, if you put yourself on a schedule and have three discrete meals per day and do your best not to allow yourself to snack in between meals, that's just one little step that you can do because even while at home, we should be putting ourselves on a schedule time to either exercise, or if you can't exercise because now gyms are closed and whatnot, at least go outside and go for a walk if you can. Because it's still, you're not going to get coronavirus by walking outdoors in open air and keeping your distance from people. It's good to get that fresh air. But the other thing that I encourage people to do, because it's so great for the gut and it reduces inflammation, is to do a 12-hour overnight fast. So when you stop eating at night, don't eat after that. Don't have that late-night snacking and wait until the next morning. Now, if it's like 9, 10 p.m. and you're feeling like those cravings are starting to hit, and remember, craving is like a wave. It has a crescendo, it has a peak, and then it drops. If it was hunger, hunger would build up slowly and it would continue to build up and it wouldn't go away until you fulfill it. So it's very different because a lot of people get confused about that. And if you don't give in to a craving initially, it's usually going to go into its down. You don't need to eat to survive if you're having a craving. It's a whole different concept. But what I tell people is have a tea, have a kava tea, have a chamomile, something that soothes the system, so then it still gives you that feeling that you're nourishing yourself, you're doing something that's loving kindness to yourself. So instead of feeling deprived, but at the same token, it's keeping you from hitting the cupboard with all those non-perishable snacks that you shouldn't buy anyway. My other advice is buy frozen vegetables, and if you can't find frozen vegetables, I'm still finding a lot of fresh produce. Take the fresh produce, cut it up, put it in separate containers, put it in your freezer, and now you have frozen vegetables that you made yourself. And try to eat as many vegetables as you can. Keeping your blood pH more alkaline is also going to make your body healthier and boost your immune system.
All right, well, that's a good segue. So let's talk about, I know you talk a lot about gut health, and gut health is a huge function of overall immunity, how strong our immune systems and overall health. So I'd like to talk about two things. One, like the wake-up call, like now maybe it's a wake-up, like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not the healthiest I could be, and that makes me more susceptible or vulnerable to either getting the virus, or if I get it, I healthy bodies can deal with that much better than unhealthy bodies. So one, I would say, for those that maybe now is the time to start paying attention to health. Like, what else is there to do other than watch Netflix? What would you advise to really start building healthy guts right now, and any other thing that can be very proactive to make now the time to just, I'm just going to focus on my health?
Exactly. I mean, what I was telling my son is, who was really upset about the fact that all of his plans are, you know, destroyed. Spring break is pretty much a wash. But he has all this space because now he doesn't have to go to volleyball practice. He doesn't have to be going. He had two volleyball leagues that he was going to be in. So it was a lot of practice. And I'm like, well, you can either lament the fact that you're missing all these things, or you can look for the opportunity within this to acquire a new skill, to do something new. And like I was talking to a patient earlier this week, she was realizing that her problem was that meal planning was difficult for her, but it wouldn't ever get easier unless she started doing it. You know, it was overcoming that inertia. So this is a great time to go online, learn how to cook, do new recipes, try out new things. And one thing that I've told people as a solution to trying to stay away from all those dangerous packaged foods is to even think about substituting a meal with a smoothie that you put in berries. You can put in superfoods. The smoothie that I make for myself in the morning, which I use, I have my Happy Gut Cleanse powder. I'll put lion's mane in there, which is really great for the brain. I'll put raw cacao. I'll put hemp seeds in there. I put MCT oil. Sometimes I'll put in green Swiss chard. I'll put in frozen blueberries, frozen black cherries, you know, just getting a lot of antioxidants. And that's how I start my day now. So way to start the day with a nutrient-packed meal that you know is nourishing your cells, good for your brain. So it's kind of like, you know, finding the opportunity within this to kind of redefine the way that you do things. You know, what a great moment to set new habits, because you have so many people now have a lot more time at home. Even if they're still working a full day, you don't have to do that hour commute to work and the hour commute back home. You know, so you just gained all this time. I mean, I have to say that even though there have been challenges transforming my office into a fully virtual operation, there are some nice things about not having to get on the subway, get into Midtown, you know, get across New York City traffic, hear the ambulances and the cop cars and all that, and just be in the quiet of my apartment and go outside when I want to go for a run or whatever. But there's always an opportunity within the crisis. And I do feel for all the people who have lost loved ones and who are maybe suffering from symptoms of coronavirus. Some people are suffering with symptoms for 3 weeks. But that's why I'm putting out this information on how you can rebuild your immune system. And if any time is better than now, I don't know what other time everyone should be thinking about, what can I do to fortify my terrain? That's what I talk about in my book, Happy Gut. And I have a whole 28-day program on how people can change their diet to not only improve their gut health, but also improve their immune health.
Yeah, so any other advice? Like, if we're going to focus on being as immune as possible for our health, part one. And then part two, I'd like to talk a little bit, if somebody does get the virus, what do you recommend in that case?
Yeah, even as a preventive, I've been recommending to all of my patients kind of the very essentials. Vitamin D3, everybody's, most people are deficient in vitamin D. We're staying a lot of time indoors now. So even if you weren't, your vitamin D levels are dropping, and you need vitamin D because it's basically not a vitamin. It's really a hormone. They just called it a vitamin before they knew how it actually acted in the body. But like other hormones, what it does is it controls and regulates genes, and it happens to control a lot of genes that have to do with the innate immune system and the way the immune system functions. And your innate immune system, just think of it as the primitive part of your immune system. So it's the part of the immune system that can rally and counter an invasion with a virus or bacteria very early on, while the more sophisticated part of your immune system starts to create antibodies and a very specific response to whatever is the invader. So the innate immune system is kind of like the pawns on a chessboard. They're the ones that can go out first. And really key and important, it's controlled by vitamin D3. So that is one key nutrient. But the other things we're finding, like with this coronavirus, is quercetin, a bioflavonoid that's found in foods like capers, are super high in quercetin. That is an essential nutrient for fighting off this virus. Apparently, it helps reduce viral replication. And it also, so you have to combine it with zinc. So I tell people to take 1,000 milligrams of quercetin and combine it with zinc, a chelated zinc, about 30 milligrams. And what it does is it opens up a channel so that zinc can get across the cell membrane and inside the cells. And zinc is really important when it comes to this virus because it blocks the enzyme that replicates the virus. So getting zinc inside the cells, where zinc doesn't easily go inside cells, so it needs something to transport it in. Quercetin is key. In conjunction with quercetin, vitamin C is really important. And I'm telling people to take 2,000 milligrams as a preventive. It's key to the type of vitamin C. Like, you know, there's low-grade vitamins and there's higher-grade vitamins. When it comes to C, if you can find a liposomal C, that's going to be the best that you can get because it's going to get across your intestines and across your mucous membranes, and it's going to get into your circulation. It's going to make the highest levels of vitamin C, which turns out vitamin C helps protect against that runaway inflammation that happens, which is why people are dying from this coronavirus. It's because just imagine that your body, when it's fighting off an infection, it's creating a controlled fire. Well, if that fire gets out of control and now it's a forest fire and it's spreading like happens in the lungs, there's a point where your immune system just can't control it anymore and the person develops acute lung injury and what we call acute respiratory distress syndrome. And so there's a point where it's very difficult because your body's going to need so many antioxidants. Now, there is some evidence they've been using in China, high doses of intravenous vitamin C to treat even people who have been more advanced, and it helps rescue the lungs. So vitamin C is a liposomal form, very key nutrient. The other ones that I tell people are vitamin A, but with caution, because vitamin A is really good for helping activate your metabolism. You need vitamin A to sensitize all your cells to thyroid hormone. But if you're a woman who's pregnant or might get pregnant, vitamin A could cause birth defects. So you don't want to take high doses of vitamin A if you're childbearing age. But otherwise, vitamin A is really great for fighting off viruses, especially when it's derived from fish oil, so your body doesn't have to convert the beta carotene into vitamin A. Then there's another nutrient that's actually an amino acid. It's called N-acetylcysteine. If you look at it in stores, you'll find it as NAC. And what NAC does is it increases intracellular glutathione. So it's a precursor for glutathione. And for those who don't know glutathione is the body's main detox molecule. It's protective of the cells. So very important for glutathione levels to be high. And I find that NAC is also protective of mitochondria when you go on antibiotics. And mitochondria are the little energy factories in your cells, which if they become dysfunctional, you're going to feel very tired because basically it's like somebody took the power grid and reduced it by 50%. You're not going to have enough energy to go around. But the other great thing about NAC is that it's protective of the lungs. So it serves a whole other purpose, which is really great. And it also boosts your immune system and helps your liver detoxify. So to me, it's one of those key essential nutrients combined with the vitamins and the vitamin D3 that plays a really great role. There's also some Chinese herbs. So andrographis, for example, there's a lot of good research on how andrographis can be protective in viral infections and can also protect against the cytokine storm. And I've been looking at research on melatonin as well. Everybody knows melatonin is the sleep hormone. Well, it turns out that there's a lot of research, even though it's not in all in humans, some of it is in animal models. They did an animal model of SARS with mice, the original SARS, and they found that melatonin was protective of the lungs from lung injury from the SARS. And it could actually help repair the lung. And the mechanism for that is that melatonin actually cuts that inflammatory pathway that causes the runaway forest fire. So pretty amazing. But to tie that in with melatonin, that's why everybody tells you, get a good amount of sleep. Sleep is really important, super key and important. So for me, and what I've been advising is turn off the news. Don't watch the news at night. Don't get yourself all amped up. Like, allow that wind down period. And now that you're home and you don't have to do that extra, the commute to work, then allow yourself to get those 7, 8 hours of sleep a night. That's also going to boost your immune system. They found in studies where they looked at immune response to the flu vaccine, and then they did a comparison between a group that was getting adequate sleep and they did a sleep deprived group, and they found the group of subjects that were sleep deprived did not develop as strong of an immune response to the vaccine as the people who were sleeping well. So we know that you need good sleep. And probably because you need healthy melatonin levels to be able to fight off the virus. And that's one theory why kids have not been getting as bad of a case with this virus, is that they tend to have higher melatonin levels than adults.
Fascinating. What do you say, like how much vitamin A and NAC and melatonin?
Yeah, so for vitamin A, 10,000 units. And again, with a caveat, if you're pregnant, if you think you might be pregnant, then don't take it. Check with your doctor, make sure it's okay. With NAC, it can be anywhere between 600 and 1,000 milligrams a day as a preventive. And with melatonin, they've done studies where they've gone all the way to 1 gram. I would not advise that. 1,000 milligrams a day of melatonin. If you look over the counter, like most melatonin supplements are like 1 to 3 milligrams. But they found and they've done studies where it's safe in humans. They've dosed it at 10 milligrams twice a day. I've had a couple of patients who were really sick in their lungs, and I had them start taking melatonin to help and protect the lungs. Because we know, and there are studies using melatonin in post-breast cancer women where they use it as a way to maintain, reduce inflammation, but also keep the immune system in check and keep. So there's a lot of good research on how melatonin can be helpful, and even taking higher doses than what you normally would just to go to sleep could be helpful in preventing the worst consequences of an infection.
And outside of melatonin for almost different reasons, but I mean, stress levels are a little bit higher right now, and maybe people are have I know my sleep's been it's not the same right now, even though I think I'm fine. I just notice I'm not sleeping as well. So clearly there's some underlying stress or something going on. And but I, maybe in general, do you have any type of natural sleep like CBD, or is there anything else that can maybe assist with sleep, those that maybe aren't sleeping as well at this time?
Yeah, I mean, this is a different hack for different people, but and sometimes you have to try different things. But CBD is a great idea. That works great for some people. If you're super sensitive, it might knock you out too much. Something even gentler than CBD is taking magnesium glycinate. Magnesium glycinate, what it does is it activates the secretion of GABA in the brain, and GABA's the neurotransmitter that just kind of goes shh, like everybody quiet down, like relax. So GABA is really key and important to kind of help your system wind down at night. Magnesium can trigger the release of GABA. So taking magnesium glycinate at bedtime, anywhere between 200, 400 milligrams, or depending on the person, you can safely, nothing bad is going to happen if you take too much magnesium. You're just going to feel super relaxed and and fall asleep. The other things that I use sometimes, plant essences, passion flower is really nice, valerian root. And you can even find teas that have these, like bedtime teas that have these types of essences. But I think really important also is to, you know, wind down at night, getting away from all the amped up being on TV or even on your phone, wearing blue light blockers to reduce the stimulus on the retina, because that also interrupts sleep at night, is the exposure to blue light from all the artificial lighting that we have, you know, as we go into the evening. I tend to try to start to dim the lights as I get into the evening. And that's one thing that is a good advice, is like, really, you know, don't have your lights on super bright at like 10 p.m. at night. Like, start to dim them down, turn some lights off, like allow your body to feel the effect that it's nighttime and it's time to wind down.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
But I hear you, because the first week that this happened, I was reading so many studies on chat groups with my friends, even at 11 p.m. at night, exchanging journal articles, like trying to figure out, how do we respond to this? What do we say to patients? What is truth? What isn't truth? And I was having like one night good sleep. The next night I couldn't fall asleep. Following night, I was so exhausted I would go to sleep. Then the next night, I was too amped up, reading too many studies. And now what I'm doing is I'm trying to get all my reading done during the day. And at nighttime, I try to not think about COVID-19, try to wind down, maybe watch something funny and get my mind off of it. Because I think, you know, in the beginning, everybody's scared and you're trying to find as much information as possible. But you have to realize that, you know, we're biophysical beings and our body is much more sensitive, I think, than we give credit to. And a lot of people think their bodies, they think they're superwoman or superman, and we're not. We're biological beings, and that biology requires us to have a rhythm. And part of an act of love to self, or love of compassion, loving compassion to self, is to honor that internal rhythm and not think that we're computers and just keep pushing and pushing and pushing, or staying up late at night and researching on the internet and trying to learn this and that. Well, that's not serving your biology. So being really aware of that, that in itself is going to weaken your immune system. So you want to do things that are going to strengthen your immune system. And part of that might be like getting on a Zoom call with family and putting music on and dancing. I've heard of people doing house party app with their friends and playing charades. Like, you know, do things that are fun and get your mind off of the doom and gloom messaging that is out there right now.
Yeah, right on. So really, we're approaching the time of the end of our time together. That was so good and so fast. What are your sentiments right now? How are you feeling with everything going on? Again, from your own unique point of view, being a doctor, having patients, you know, what your life was a few weeks ago and how that compares to today. Like, what's your view of the world?
Oh, geez. The world is, you know, I think, I always look for the gift within the things that happen. You know, for me, like, the reason I ended up writing my book is because I suffered from IBS for a big portion of my life until I was able to figure out how to cure myself of it. And I could look at it as that I had this crutch, this horrible thing. I was destined to have IBS, but I look at it as a gift because it's what brought me, it was the impetus for what I do now and the messages that I bring to people about how to heal themselves in the terrain. So it was kind of like my wake-up call. It was what I needed. And I think this is a wake-up call for the world, that our health systems are stressed, they are on the verge, and you can't wait until crisis to then decide that you're going to work on your health, you know? So I think the message and what I'm seeing is the time is today to start making the changes that are going to be positive for yourself. and for the people around you, because if you're in a better state, then you can relate better to your family members, to your loved ones. And this goes on for everyone. I mean, the both physical health, mental health. I think it's a huge wake-up call to change the paradigm. And I think that's what's going to happen from this. And maybe also, you know, the other thing that I've found is that it, as separated as we are, as isolated as we are, it's created a desire to reach out and connect more. So my family did something that we've never done. We set up a Zoom family call to celebrate my cousin's birthday. And unfortunately, it turned out my cousin, who is in Spain, did not have reliable internet. So she, the one person, the guest of honor, could not be on the Zoom call. But then we all just started chatting and bonding, and we had never done that. So this is creating this need to reach out. And I think when we can actually be in the presence of others and touch each other again and hug, I hope we will not forget and appreciate how important it is to connect. Connect at a mental level, but also to connect at a physical level. We know that preemies thrive, premature infants, they thrive when they are touched. And if you don't touch them, they don't thrive. So humans, we need touch. And I think if anything about coming out of this, and my vision and my hope is that this will make us more human. And we had a lot of distractions before, a lot of things going on. And this has taken all those distractions away because you can't travel easily. You can't go to all the restaurants and things that you would normally do. So people are having to sit home with themselves and really kind of be present with themselves and with their loved ones. And I think it's an opportunity to really drop down and become more human.
I love that. All right, just a few wrap-up questions that I complete all my podcast with. The first thing is, if you said, Christina, if you really, really, really knew me, you would know that.
Oh my goodness. What would that be? I'm trying to think something that my family would know about me. I mean, I think you probably know this a little bit, but there's kind of like a quirkiness about me, and there's a bit of a childish silliness that comes out, and it might be like humming or singing or whatever. I do it sometimes with my son just to try to crack a smile from him, and hopefully not a roll of the eyes. There's a bit of a quirkiness to me and a lighthearted happiness. Like, I'll give you an example, and this is this is embarrassing to say, but I'll say it. When my son was little, in the morning, I was always a very not as a younger person, but once you have a child, you have to become a morning person. So I was a cheerful morning person, and I always am. Because I'm like, you can either be grumpy in the morning, or you can choose, you can make the choice that you're just going to be happy, because it still sucks some days to have to wake up early in the morning, especially if you only got 6 hours of sleep. But I would pick him up and I would sing Disney tunes in a very high-pitched voice, kind of like a Disney character. And I would carry him around the apartment when he was still, you know, at that little toddler age. And that's how I would wake him up. Very quirky and silly.
And you do have a quirky silliness that I didn't expect, and it's so beautiful. I love that about you. So, yes. All right. So, share with me a brag moment. What's something you're really proud of?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. I think I'm most proud of how many obstacles I've surmounted and not let them stop me. And, you know, people look and say, you know, like writing a book is easy. That book took me probably from the idea that I wanted to write a book to when I finally conceived it and got a book offer, that was a good 8 years. And I never gave up because I knew I had a book in me and I knew that I had a message to bring out to the world. It's just that it had to mature kind of like a good bottle of wine. It needed time to sit and I had to figure things out. And so, you know, I tell that story to my son all the time because I tell him, well, what if I gave up at year five? Or what if I gave up at year six? I would have never known all of the wonderful things that I could do for people and become this voice and bring such great information to people who need it. And so I feel really proud that I didn't give up and that I, in spite of, I mean, so many obstacles in the way, along the way, in getting the book deal and writing the book. And the one thing that I always kept in my mind is that this is mine and I'm not going to stop until I accomplish it.
I love that. Yes. And it's a great book, by the way, for everybody listening. And we'll put a link to your book in the show notes and everybody can do some good gut health, by the way. And then Absolutely. One final question is, bust a myth for me. Is there one kind of big fat lie out there that you'd like to call out from your perspective?
In perspective of what's going on now or just in general?
Let's do it right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of more a perspective thing. The myth thing is that, you know, a virus like this kills you. That it's not what kills you, it hijacks your cellular machinery, and then your body kills itself through its reaction. So what I think is the myth is living in fear of this thing is going to come from outside of us and it could potentially kill us. And we have no control over it other than practicing these really austere infection control guidelines, you know, washing your hands, which is important. But I think the myth there is that there's nothing that you can do. And the message that I bring is that there's a lot that you can do because you can build and fortify your immune system by working on your gut health, which is where 70% of your immune system lies. And you can maybe not prevent yourself from getting it, but you have the ability to be in a place where your body will be able to overcome it.
Yeah, well said. All right, Vincent, thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm grateful for you in my life, and thanks for all the work you're doing and being on the front lines in New York, like helping people.
Thank you. Thank you again. Such a pleasure.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.